You are listening to an exclusive podcast on Money Control.
It is the 16th of July. Earnings season has earnestly begun. It is also happy birthday to Katrina Kaif and, more importantly, Larry Sanger. You might not know his name, but he's probably one of the most important people of our times and indeed of all times. He was one of the co-founders of Wikipedia, about which we cannot be thankful enough. It was also this day, all the way back in 1661, that the first banknotes in Europe were issued. And speaking of banknotes, Alan Turing, the hero that won the Second World War by cracking the Enigma code, who was dealt so poorly because he was gay and it was illegal to be gay back in those days, and he committed suicide therefore. And now he's on a £50 banknote in Britain. The Bank of England has just announced it. All of these events and so many more, including some personal news about which we won't speak because the personal is not as important as the political and other. Why? Because political and other stories are what I bring to you on Stories of the Day right here on Money Control. My name is Rakesh Sharma, and your appointment with news from across the world begins now.
Editor's Pick of the Day.
Let's start with some quick earnings news. HDFC AMC quarter one results are out. Net profit has surged 42%. HDFC AMC is the largest actively managed equity-oriented mutual fund manager in the country. Total assets under management there rose 18% to 3,56,700 crore rupees. Next up, Federal Bank. Federal Bank's June quarter profit grew by 46.2% year-on-year to 384.2 crore rupees, despite provisions remaining elevated and asset quality weakening. Higher other income and operating profit boosted earnings. Profit in the same quarter last year was almost 120 crores less at 262.7 crore rupees. Net interest income, which is the difference between interest earned and interest expended, increased 17.8%. Year on year. Some news from close home. Network 18 posted a consolidated net loss of 141.3 crore rupees for the quarter ended June, against a loss of 111.92 crore rupees during the same period. Consolidating operating revenue increased 11% year on year. The double digit revenue growth was amidst a weak advertising environment led by election advertising and strong growth in subscription income post implementation of new tariff order. Network 18 said so in a BSE filing. Digital revenues grew 34% year-on-year to 47 crore rupees as growing ad spends in News18.com, especially vernacular section of News18, boosted revenues even amidst a rather tepid environment. Some news from Yes Bank now. Yes Bank shares rallied almost 11% today after a media report indicated that private equity firms showed interest for a major stake in the private sector lender. The stock closed at 103.9 rupees, that is up almost 11.5% amid high volumes. The Economic Times said, quoting some unnamed sources, that US-based private equity investor made an offer to acquire $850 million stake in the bank, the term sheet offer for which was made over the weekend. The report also went on to add, and I quote, there are three more PE players in the consortium, two US-based and two domestic. The consortium leader may pick a 10% stake in the bank, while the rest may together pick another 10%. The lender, that is Yes Bank, is looking to raise $1 to $1.2 billion, as reported by Bloomberg Quint. But to avoid excess equity dilution for its existing shareholders, it might do so in two rounds. This, according to a report on Bloomberg Quint. Shares of Yes Bank, as you know, have lost 74% of their value in the last 1 year alone. Businessline has reported that Manipal Hospitals has ironed out valuation issues with Medanta and is all set to acquire its hospital chain for 5,500 to 6,000 crore rupees. A top executive told Businessline, and I quote, if we had to face any roadblocks, we would have come across it by now. We have crossed most of the hurdles, but there can be a slip between the cup and the lip even at the last moment, unquote. So as of now, this seems to be on track. This is, of course, coming after year-long negotiation on valuation and stake held by Medanta promoters' families, but analysts now believe that the deal has been struck at a fair value. Manipal Hospitals is also working on creating a digital platform for healthcare, backed by quality data and experienced professionals. This is to increase involvement in the patient's journey from diagnosis to cure. Business Standard has reported that the government's first tranche of overseas sovereign bonds might be issued at $3 to $4 billion. The bonds will likely be issued simultaneously at financial hubs like London, New York, Singapore, and Hong Kong. Finance Minister Nirmala Sitharaman had announced the centre's intention to issue overseas sovereign bonds during her budget presentation. This move is likely to help the government take advantage of the excess liquidity in global markets and create additional space for corporate bonds in the Indian market. Not everybody is a fan, though. This proposal to raise overseas debt has come under criticism. Former RBI Governor Professor Raghuram Rajan said the plan comes with several risks but no real benefit. A 2019 study by the UK-based Brand Finance of the nation, that is India's leading 100 brands, shows a sharp jump in brand valuation achieved by Tata Group. Now, Tata Group has topped that brand valuation chart. This 2019 list, which is released exclusively to Business Standard, shows a 37% jump in brand value for the Tata Group to $19.55 billion for 2019, which is the highest in the top 25. LIC, Infosys and SBI are the other brands that have the highest brand value, according to the study. Bloomberg has reported that India is considering inviting expressions of interest, that is EOI, to sell Air India by the end of next month, as the government aims to complete the transaction this year. About this, we did a digging deeper, which was an update on the status of the Maharaja and what the suitors are looking like. And we had said that as early as the end of July, there could be invitations for EOI, and this has been confirmed now. The government will conduct roadshows as well as be open to meet prospective buyers even before EOI's are sought, people who have knowledge of the matter have said. The process will likely allow the bidders to look at the accounts of the airline, except for some portions which are confidential, and will also see the share purchase agreement, they said, without providing any more details. The potential bidders will have the option to make suggestions for changes in the sale terms during this process. The government is looking to sell all its stake in the carrier, these people have said, because this is clearly a departure from the time when the government wanted to hold on to 24% stake, and considering that did not attract any buyers, there has been a change in the tune. The government is singing, because this time they are truly intent on divesting Air India. We've been speaking about the fact that consumer sentiment has been subdued because of the slowdown in the economy, and that is reflected in auto sales as well. Data released by FADA, that is Federation of Automobile Dealers Associations, showed that retail sales of automobiles across the country in June declined by 5.4% year-on-year. Showroom sales of passenger vehicles decreased by 4.6%, and wholesale's passenger vehicle segment declined significantly by 17.54%, led by a 24% fall in passenger car sales. Last year, when Pinarayi Vijayan, who is the Chief Minister of Kerala, met with World Bank's team, the state had just faced massive rains and floods. It was hoping to make an impression on the World Bank in order to start an initiative together. And now it seems there has come to a conclusion, in the sense that the first tranche of this deployment has happened yesterday. $250 million of the $500 million that has been granted by the World Bank in this Resilient Kerala initiative happened yesterday. State partnership, according to the World Bank, is an instrument to have long-term investment in the state. The recommendations include drafting a River Basin Management Act and also establishing a River Basin Management Authority, not just in Kerala, but across India. The Kerala State Electricity Board has the mandate to ensure maximum power generation during monsoon, for which it has to maintain the reservoir levels close to full, as opposed to lowering the levels and preventing a massive flood situation. The CM said yesterday, more than a project partner, World Bank will be our development partner now. How well this partnership between the World Bank and Kerala will go on, we'll of course keep you updated. Well, we all know how well WeWork is doing across the country, and now Oyo is looking to get a slice of that pie. Oyo announced its multi-brand approach to workspaces opportunity in the country today. Oyo Workspaces, which is led by Rohit Kapoor, is a fully controlled workspaces solutions provider designed to meet the needs of over 80% of the working population in the country, reports Mint. The announcements include the addition of Innovate, one of the leading co-working companies in India, offering ergonomically designed workspaces created for a better work life. Kapoor, CEO of New Real Estate Business, also introduced a multi-brand approach with two other co-working brands, that is Power Station and Workflow. Oyo Workspaces is set to open doors to its 21 plus workspaces with 15,000 and more seats across 10 cities in India. Of these, Innovate is currently spread across six cities, Delhi, Noida, Gurgaon, Bangalore, Chandigarh, and Mumbai, and 16 centers hosting over 6,000 employees of various different brands like Swiggy, Paytm, Pepsi, Nykaa, etc. The trial run on the 4.2 kilometers long Dwarka to Najafgarh corridor of the Delhi Metro has started, according to officials. Of the three stations in this corridor, Dwarka, Nangli are elevated ones, while Najafgarh is underground. Gautam Adani's group company, Adani Ports and Special Economic Zone, today announced it has commenced a tender offer to buy back bonds worth $650 million due in 2020. The bond repurchase program will close on the 24th of July. Adani Ports is buying back the $1,000 bonds for $1,009.50 apiece. Well, in some sad news, tax officials have detected 37,946 crore rupees worth of tax fraud in 2018-2019 and 6,520 crore rupees in the April to June period of this financial year after GST implementation. McKinsey Global Institute has come out with a report called Asia's Future is Now, and this report seems to indicate that the share of goods traded across the border in both India and China has dramatically fallen since 2006 and stood at around 8.5% in India and 8.3% in China. More goods are being consumed domestically than they are being exported. The Institute said global output over the past decade has continued to rise, but the share of goods traded across borders has fallen by 5.6 percentage points. The report said, and I quote, "This decline does not reflect trade disputes or hint at an impending slowdown. Instead, it reflects healthy economic development in China, India, and the rest of emerging Asia." Well, good news to all those people who want to go to Toronto. India's national carrier, Air India, will launch the Delhi-Toronto direct flight on the occasion of the World Tourism Day on the 27th of September, despite facing the threat of privatization because of, well, you might have heard of it, the mountains of debts that Air India has. The airline is also planning to launch a direct flight to Nairobi sometime in October because of the immense tourism potential in that area. Meanwhile, the government has lowered the interest rate on GPF, that is General Provident Fund, and other similar funds in line with a general decline in overall interest rates in the financial system. For the July to September period, GPF and other similar funds will pay 7.9% interest as compared to 8% in the previous quarter. Well, if you've been wondering if the Achhe Din have returned since the arrival of Modi 2.0, I suppose re-arrival of Modi 2.0, but Business Insider says Achhe Din has certainly happened for Snapdeal, which has said its revenue jumped 73% and losses are down to less than a third. Snapdeal has announced a consolidated revenue of 925.3 crore rupees with a 73% jump in revenue. The e-commerce platform has also cut its losses by 71%, and over 50 employees have returned to join the company, which has seen a turnaround in business since it launched Snapdeal 2.0 in July 2017. This, according to a report on Business Insider. Business Insider, in an interview with Danny Wang, who is the regional director of global B2B business of Alibaba.com, spoke about what's driving their India business, and it is gems and jewelry. He says they're selling like hotcakes across the world. In India, Alibaba has over 6 million users and 15,000 merchants. Business stories done. Let's take a look at some other stories doing the rounds in the country. And the first one I bring to you is a rather tragic one. At least 7 people have been reported to be killed and several others injured after a 4-story building came crashing down in Mumbai's Dongri area today. Over 12 others, and some other news agencies are saying perhaps even more, are feared trapped under the debris. Officials from the Mumbai Police, Mumbai Fire Brigade and National Disaster Response Force, that is NDRF, are conducting rescue operations with the help of locals. The difficulty is that it is in a rather narrow lane and rescue efforts have been hampered because of that. Maharashtra Chief Minister Devendra Fadnavis said at least 15 families are feared trapped in the debris. The building was 100 years old and had been considered for redevelopment, but an investigation was required to check if the work had begun. The ground plus 4-story Kesarbai building is located in Dongri's Tandel Street and it crashed around 11:40 a.m. this morning. The building was part of a cluster of houses located near the Abdul Hamid Dargah on Muhammad Ali Road in Dongri. Well, it's not just you taking notice of the fact that some MPs are not attending Parliament. This time it is in fact the Prime Minister. For the second time in a month, PM Modi has pulled up BJP MPs for their poor attendance in Parliament and told the party leadership that he should be informed if they skip their duty. This according to a report on PTI. Modi further said that he should be given names of all absentee ministers the same evening. Speaking at a BJP parliamentary party meeting, Modi said the ongoing monsoon session could be extended if it was necessary to pass the government's legislative agenda. The monsoon session is scheduled to end on the 26th of July. Normal air traffic operations between India and Pakistan have resumed starting today, with Islamabad opening its airspace for all civilian flights nearly 4.5 months after shutting it down following the Balakot airstrikes. Pakistan's Civil Aviation Authority issued a notice to airmen stating that the country's airspace has been opened with immediate effect. Following Pakistan's move, India has also issued a revised NOTAM, that is, Notice to Airmen, which announced that normal air traffic operations have resumed between the two countries. Among other things, this is good news for Air India because it suffered a financial loss of around 491 crore rupees because it had to reroute various international flights due to the closure of the Pakistan airspace. Returning to the Nataka that is ongoing in Karnataka, the Supreme Court has reserved its order for the 17th of July on the plea moved by Karnataka rebel MLAs. The verdict will be pronounced tomorrow at 10:30 in the morning. Speaker K.R. Ramesh, who is basically at the center of this crisis, also has sought time till tomorrow to decide on the disqualification and resignation of the rebel MLAs. A bench headed by Chief Justice Ranjan Gogoi is first dealing with the pleas of 10 MLAs against the Speaker for not accepting their resignations. It also heard arguments of 5 more MLAs who allege that they are being forced to support the government on the threat of disqualification. The Chief Minister's lawyer told the court that the dissident MLAs were hunting in a pack to destabilize the government. The 10 rebel Karnataka MLAs told the Supreme Court that the Speaker was coercing them to vote for the Kumaraswamy government by not accepting their resignations. The Bombay High Court has quashed the Environment Ministry's Coastal Regulation Zone clearance, that is CRZ clearance, for the southern stretch of the Brihan Mumbai Municipal Corporation's Coastal Road project. We know that the BMC has proposed an almost 30-kilometer-long coastal road from Princess Street in South Mumbai to Kandivali in the western suburbs. And construction of the first 9.96-kilometer stretch to the Worli end from Princess Street has actually begun. The project cost has been pegged at about 12,000 crore rupees. BMC's reason for this particular project is, of course, that it will ease the traffic in the city. But environmentalists, activists and fisherfolk are opposed to this project because they say it will severely affect marine biodiversity along Mumbai's western coast and that the land reclamation will cause irreversible damage to the sea. So a few of them had filed a petition in February and March. In April, the High Court had asked the BMC not to take up any fresh work like reclamation on the project. And today, the High Court upheld contentions that environmental and wildlife clearances were required for the project and ruled that the CRZ clearance had been granted illegally. So, as of now, the TLDR is that the High Court has stayed the project. The BMC, which is committed to this particular road, is now looking to move the Supreme Court against the High Court's order. Well, in the run-up to the Shadi season, there might be a bit of a bumper for big fat Indian weddings. In December of last year, the Supreme Court had raised concerns over food wastage at big functions. Going by that, the social function policy was drafted by the Delhi government in March to put a cap on the food that went waste at social functions held in the nation's capital. This draft will likely be notified in July. Implementing this would mean there would be an upper limit on the number of people who can be invited to a wedding or any other aspect of fanfare and celebration. The policy will additionally make it mandatory to distribute surplus food to the underprivileged through NGOs. Going through the news from about 10 different newspapers and 5 different websites from across the country and the world is a bit taxing because most of the news these days are, well, sad. JNU security guard cracking the university's entrance exam, wanting to be an IAS officer and gaining admission to BA honours in Russian language is happily a departure from my usual sad variety of news. Ramjal Meena, who's a 34-year-old security guard at JNU, yes, that very JNU that a lot of people seem to hate, has cracked the university's entrance exam and will be studying BA honours in Russia, in Russian language. Meena already has an undergraduate degree from Rajasthan University and has cleared the first year of MA Political Science also from Rajasthan University in distance mode. He now wishes to serve the government by appearing in the UPSC recruitment exam. With that very happy piece of news from JNU, let's turn to our other business, which is, of course, to look at financial markets elsewhere. We start with US stock futures. They're pointing to a rather mixed open today after a day of small gains yesterday, kept the record closes going on Wall Street, but it was still a rather muted day. And today we're looking at possibly mixed open for Wall Street. And to anybody who says that just because the stock market is booming, everybody is happy and the economy is doing well, but that's wrong. But that's beside the point. What else is happening on Wall Street today? Dow stocks, JP Morgan and Goldman Sachs report this morning, as also Wells Fargo. Johnson & Johnson, which is another component in the Dow, is also out with earnings just before the bell. I don't have it just yet, so I'm not giving it to you. United Airlines and CSX are also among those companies which are set to report today. Goldman Sachs earnings blow past Wall Street on strong investing, banking, investment banking and trading. Johnson & Johnson profit spikes as pharma fuels growth, consumer and medical devices improve. So I did get those results after all, this according to CNBC. It's also a busy day for economic numbers because retail sales and import prices for June will come out today. Industrial production figures will also be out later in the day. Busy day for the Congress there. The Congress in the United States begins 2 days of hearings today on Facebook's cryptocurrency Libra and the market power of Facebook and Google, Amazon and Apple. Even as Amazon is going on with its Prime Day, it's probably going to be their biggest yet because it's now 48 hours long. The Treasury Department has very serious concerns that Libra could be misused by money launderers and terrorist financiers. Every time you have to say there's a problem and I'm not entirely certain this would work, you can always say terrorism. And this time it is Steven Mnuchin, who's the Treasury Secretary, who said Libra could be used by terrorists. Meanwhile, the House is also going to be voting today on whether Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross, who's I think about 175 years old, and Attorney General Mr. Barr in contempt for not complying with subpoenas regarding the addition of citizenship question to the 2020 census. These two people were asked to come before the House in relation to questioning them about adding the citizenship question in the 2020 census. They, well, happily did not come. And now the House is voting whether to hold the two of them in contempt. China has rebuffed a suggestion from Trump that Beijing needs a trade deal with the US because its economy is slowing. The president has always been saying this, with their China needs us desperately, their economy is slowing down, etc. And now China has said these comments are totally misleading. Where did Trump make these comments? Take a wild guess. It's tweet. You're right. He seized on the slowing economic growth. We spoke about this yesterday. Slowest in about 27 years or so. And he said this is evidence that the US tariffs were having a major effect. And now China is saying, well, that's misleading. You know what else is misleading? The way Trump spells Al-Qaeda. Have you seen it? He gave a press conference yesterday because he sent out that rather racist tweet about the four congresswomen of color and said they were not American. If you're not happy living here, go back to your country, which is the sort of slur that a lot of people of color living abroad in different countries have faced. I'm certain I have faced it myself when I was living abroad, which also means it is rooted in great racism. In fact, all four of the congresswomen are American because if they were not, they would not be in the Congress. That is not how U.S. Politics works. Three of them were born in the U.S. and Ilhan Omar is a naturalized American citizen. They held a press conference, you know, saying, do not take the bait, telling their supporters, do not take the bait. This is just a diversionary tactic. And then Trump gave his own press conference where he, you know, doubled down. And one of his notes said he was going to bring up the aspect of Al-Qaeda, you know, because you bring it up whenever you want to make a point. And his spelling of it was A-L-C-A-I-D-A, which is just another hint that the man reads nothing. Well, in their bid to take this president out of the White House, a lot of Democratic nominees are raising a lot of money, and leading that camp now is Mayor Pete Buttigieg, who has raised almost $24 million in the quarter. The other high earners, so to speak, of donations are Joe Biden, Bernie Sanders, Kamala Harris, and Elizabeth Warren. You know, who has not been making a lot of money in terms of donations? Beto O'Rourke, who was in all the rage, a household name during his senator race in Texas, and now he's lost a bit of that steam. Meanwhile, the Trump Victory Committee, which is a joint fundraising operation between Trump campaign and the RNC, has shown they have successfully captured some business leaders who financed their previous 2016 opponents. This includes Wilkes Brothers, who had helped Ted Cruz 3 years ago, and Steven Rosenberg, who, by the way, in the past had written a check for Hillary Clinton. Well, meanwhile, the White House projects that the federal deficit will surpass $1 trillion this year. Trump, mind your own business instead of minding other people's business. The only time this has happened in the country's history, excluding the four-year period following the Great Recession. The White House Office of Management and Budget, that is OMB, wrote in its review, the 2019 deficit has been revised to a projected $1 trillion. As a candidate, Trump had promised to wipe out not only the deficit, but the entire federal debt, which, by the way, is at $22 trillion. Republicans cast aside projections that their 2017 tax reform law would add $1.9 trillion to the deficit over a decade. Larry Kudlow, who is the House economic advisor, claimed just last week that the tax cuts were on track to pay for themselves. Oh, well. Well, in other news, today on the 16th of July in 1969, Apollo 11, which was the first mission to land astronauts on the moon, was launched from the Kennedy Space Center at Cape Kennedy in Florida. In relation to that, there's a lot of celebrations going on in the United States. There's even going to be a carnival at the U.S. Space and Rocket Center with Duran Duran performing even. So, If you've always been curious about moon travel and space travel, here is my chance to give you a few of my recommendations about space-related movies. 2001: A Space Odyssey is a film that you must watch. I think one of the modern greats now is Interstellar. You can watch that. There's also a film called Moon, extraordinary film, so no time like now to watch it. There's also The Europa Report, which I strangely quite enjoy. So there you go. Go crazy. And of course, there's Apollo 13, which is also very good. I haven't seen it in its entirety, but, you know, you can see it and tell me how it was. Well, I have more space news for you. It's one small step for man, but one giant leap for, well, chili peppers. A team of scientists at NASA is working to launch the Española chili pepper into space. This would be the first fruiting plant that the United States has grown and harvested at the International Space Station. This, according to a report on CNN. You might ask, why chili peppers? There are so many challenges to growing crops in space. You know, a plant must be easily pollinated, it should survive in a high carbon dioxide environment, etc., etc. And you know what does that? Chili pepper. And that is why you're going to have some hot sauce in the International Space Station from homegrown or space-grown chili peppers. Well, you know what? I'm going to go space crazy today. I'm going to bring to you another story which came out on Wired over the course of the weekend. And it says, if you want to go to Mars, you know what you need? Aerogel. Why do you need it? Terraforming. Let me explain what that is. Mars has a very thin atmosphere. So if Mars were warmer and had water and had more oxygen, then we would be able to live there. But the problem is the atmosphere is super thin, and there is also the problem that it lets in a lot of ultraviolet rays and lets out a lot of infrared rays, which means it cannot be very warm there. What is the solution to this? Well, foam. Carl Sagan had pitched this idea all the way back in 1971, and even then the problem was the fact that it was a very thin atmosphere. So what you do is this. You take silica aerogel, or solid smoke as it has been nicknamed, which does this. It lets in all of the heat capturing rays from the sun and keeps out the ultraviolet rays, you know, which are bad for us. And it could help warm the planet's frozen soil. And voila, you might be able to grow plants there. So, three pieces of space news for you. Bam. Well, I'll leave you with a happy bit of news. If you're running a sushi bar in Wellington in New Zealand, you might expect a lot of tourists. You might expect some birds even, you know, the birds that sort of fly, like your seagulls or whatever. But what you wouldn't expect is a couple of penguins to come and lay eggs next to your shop. And that is precisely what has happened in Wellington. Do take a look at that report, which is on rnz.co.nz. Penguins have ignored police. They have in fact come one time in the past and the police had, you know, removed them respectfully, and they're back to lay eggs there. It's a rather cute picture of penguins coming to a sushi bar. The image is rather funny. All right, and that's it. Before I let you go, I have to tell you what happened on Dalal Street. The BSE Sensex rose 234 points to close at 39,131. Nifty 50 closed 74 points higher at 11,662 on Tuesday today. Top gainers today were Sun Pharma, Tata Motors and Yes Bank. And selling was seen in Britannia Industries, TCS and Mahindra & Mahindra. Right, on our Digging Deeper podcast today, we'll be taking a look at NIA bill, which led to a bit of an altercation between Amit Shah and Owaisi in the House, in the Lok Sabha yesterday. So what is the bill all about and what is the opposition to it related to? I'll tell you all about that, including a couple of episodes we'll do on the NRC in the coming days. So you can look out for those as well. Do write into us. We love hearing what you have to say. MC podcast at nw18.com. You can also leave us a comment on any of the podcast platforms that you listen to us on. With the promise that I will return Like clockwork, first thing in the morning with a morning walk down the Lal Street. This is me, Rakesh Sharma, on behalf of the Money Control Podcast Desk, saying thank you for joining us and do stay with us on moneycontrol.com to be a smart listener and an even smarter investor.
This has been today's Editor's Pick, and you've been listening to Money Control.